all of his belly. It was as ugly and thickly humped up as burn tissue. The cracks zigged and zagged every which way, deep and black, shading to a pinkish red deep down where you most definitely did not want to look. And although you might at first think those cracks were as random as the cracks in a bomb crater, after a moment or two, your helpless eye reported a different story. At each edge, the hard yellow flesh rose a bit more. Scales. Not fish scales, but great rough reptile scales, like those on a lizard or a gator or an iguana. The brown arc of his left nipple still showed. The rest of it was gone, buried under that yellow-black carapace. The right nipple was entirely gone, and a twisted ridge of this strange new flesh reached around and under his armpit toward his back like the grasping, surfacing claw of some unthinkable monstrosity. His navel was gone, and he lowered his pajama pants, she said. She was now working on her third drink, taking those same rapid bird-like sips. First tears had begun to leak from her eyes, but that was all. That's when I found my voice again. I screamed at him to stop, and he did, but not before I'd seen it was sending fingers down into his groin. It hadn't touched his penis, at least it hadn't yet. But where it had advanced, his pubic hair was gone, and there were just those yellow scales. I thought you said it was getting better, I said. I honestly thought it was, he answered me, and the next day he made the appointment with Houston. Who probably told him, Halleck thought, about the college kid with no brain and the old lady with the third set of teeth, and asked if he'd like a short snort of the old brain squirts. A week later, Rossington had been seeing the best team of dermatologists in New York. They knew immediately what was wrong with him, they said, and a regimen of hard gamma X-rays had followed. The scaly flesh continued to creep and spread. It did not hurt, Rossington told her. There was a faint itching at the borders between his old skin and this horrible new invader, but that was all. The new flesh had absolutely no feeling at all. Smiling the ghastly, shocked smile that was coming to be his only expression, he told her that the other day he had lit a cigarette and crushed it out on his own stomach. Slowly. There had been no pain. None at all. She had put her hands up to her ears and screamed at him to stop. The dermatologists told Carrie they had been a bit off course. What do you mean? Carrie asked. You guys said you knew. You said you were sure. Well, they said these things happen. Rarely, ha-ha, very rarely. But now we have it licked. All the tests, they said, bore this new conclusion out. A regimen of hypovites, high-potency vitamins to those unfamiliar with high-priced doc talk, and glandular injections had followed. At the same time this new treatment was getting underway, the first scaly patches had begun to show up on Carrie's neck, the underside of his chin, and finally on his face. That was when the dermatologists finally admitted they were stumped. Only for the moment, of course. No such thing as incurable. Modern medicine, dietary regimen, and mumble-mumble, likewise blah-de-blah. Carrie would no longer listen to her if she tried to talk to him about the old gypsy, she told Halleck. Once he had actually raised his hand as if to strike her, and she had seen the first humping and roughening of the skin in the tender webbing between the thumb and forefinger on his right hand. Skin cancer, he shouted at her. This is skin cancer, skin cancer, skin cancer. Now will you, for Christ's sweet sake, shut up about that old wog? Of course, he was the one who was making at least nominal sense. She was the one who was talking in 14th century absurdities. And yet she knew it had been the doing of the old gypsy who had stepped out of the crowd at the Rain Tree Flea Market and touched Carrie's face. She knew it. And in his eyes, even when he raised his hand to her that time, she saw that he knew it too. He had arranged for a leave of absence with Glenn Petrie, who was shocked to hear his old friend, fellow jurist and golf partner Carrie Rossington, had skin cancer. There had followed 2 weeks, Lita told Halleck, that she could barely bring herself to remember or speak of. Carrie had alternately slept like the dead, sometimes upstairs in their room, but just as often in the big overstuffed chair in his den, or with his head in his arms at the kitchen table. He began to drink heavily every afternoon around 4. He would sit in the family room, holding the neck of a J.W. Dant whiskey bottle in one roughening, scaly hand, watching first syndicated comedy shows like Hogan's Heroes and the Beverly Hillbillies, then the local and national news, then syndicated game shows like The Joker's Wild and Family Feud, then 3 hours of prime time, followed by more news, followed by movies, until 2 or 3 in the morning. And all the while he drank whiskey like Pepsi Cola, straight from the bottle. On some of these nights, he would cry. She would come in and observe him weeping, while Warner Anderson, imprisoned inside their Sony large-screen TV, cried, "Let's go to the videotape!" with the enthusiasm of a man inviting all his old girlfriends to go on a cruise to Aruba with him. On still other nights, mercifully few of them, he would rave like Ahab during the last days of